Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Monday, the 16th of November. Very nice to have you with us on this day. Alan is checking his ear. You just turned mine up.
Thanks.
You never usually wear them.
It's a long story.
Hold on. Take your microphone. Talking to the microphone. Speak.
It's a long story about how I was walking down Broadway and my new $7,000 ear devices.
Yes.
There was a lot of hiss. No, there was a lot of wind.
Oh, okay.
When I got out of the movie, I noticed that it was $3,000 was still in my right ear, but nothing in my left ear.
Oh.
And these now have to be replaced. This one has to be replaced.
That was like a week.
Yeah,
it was a record.
It lasted a week.
I think it was a record.
All right. So do you need headphones to hear us or not?
No.
Okay. I can tell you mine are plenty loud now. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate that. Just down a little bit. That's good.
What? This is really radio verite.
Yeah, it's very good. Is that what it is?
Never let the president touch any of the controls. That's one of the things we learned
here. If you think that's so, I used to be on the Alford Fire Department in Alford, Mass.
Yeah.
In fact, I was secretary to the fire department at one point, and they told me that they trained everybody, and then they looked at me and they said, "You're going to be down on the road directing traffic at 3 o'clock in the morning in Little Alford during this fire thing, and you will never be allowed to touch a piece of machinery."
Well,
that's your point, I think, Ray, right?
Yeah, profiling.
Yeah.
Let me introduce our panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
What'd you say?
WAMC's Ray Graff is with us. Good morning. And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. First of all, obviously, we have a lot of news to discuss today. A tragedy on Friday and over the weekend, and we want to discuss that in great detail. I do quickly want to just thank everybody who came out on Friday. It was an amazing event that we had, our panel in front of a live audience. It was a lovely morning. Our audience made us feel very special, and it was very, very sweet, and it was a good time had by all. So
thank you
very much.
I was up on the other end of the
It's a huge panel.
it was very big.
It really was remarkable to see what affection your audience has for this radio station.
It was very nice, and you know, everyone kept on saying, you know, will you do it again? And yes, we'll do it again. I don't know when.
Yeah, we should do it again. It's great.
Yeah.
It's great to meet the folks.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. All right. Let's get to the news, and it's very grim, and it's a horrible terrorist attack that that happened on Friday in Paris, and then we've been watching the ripple effects of this over the weekend. The latest is France bombed the Syrian city on Sunday night of Raqqa, its most aggressive strike against the Islamic State group that it blames for killing 129 people in a string of terrorist attacks across Paris only 2 days before. The president of France vowed to be unforgiving with the barbarians of the Islamic State after the carnage in Paris, decided on the airstrikes in a meeting with his national security team on Saturday. While France has been conducting scores of airstrikes against the Islamic State in Iraq, it had been bombing inside Syria only sparingly, wary of inadvertently strengthening the hand of President Assad. So that is but one headline in this. Of course, there is what happened, how it happened, why it happened, and all of those questions that continue to be in the headlines. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we are expected to hear the President of the United States around 10:30 this morning in a press conference. He is in Turkey, and we hope that we'll be able to bring that to you coming up at 10:30 this morning. So, Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of people who have been writing to me all morning long saying, get in there, put the troops in, you know, do it. You got the President of the United States who is saying no. You got the history of this country, which is that we go into wars when we shouldn't, including the sinking of the Lusitania. And how many people got messed up because of that and killed? And So I think the president is right, but it's going to take a lot of guts for him to hold off on putting boots in the ground, because people's blood boils when these – there's certain words you can't use on the radio, but these people are intent on killing, maiming, and carrying on the way that they are. So we have surgical instruments now, like airplanes and all kinds of other things that we can do to identify the bad guys. But even when you do that, you're going to have – obviously, you're going to have civilian casualties, and that will come back too. And then there's a whole question of whether civil liberties will be denigrated as a result. And the answer to that is yes, they will. I mean, you don't have to go back further than to World War II and the terrible Korematsu case and the interning of Japanese in this country. It was a terrible thing. And that will happen here, too. And there are lots of Muslims in this country who are going to pay dear prices, which they don't deserve and shouldn't be paying because they're good people. But that's going to happen, and it's all going to get very mishmash and complicated.
The question is on the president of looking at that of so far it's been a short-term response. It's been a response basically that is helping the French warplanes and the French to in their retaliation. But coming up with a long-term response obviously is what is at stake here. And White House officials say that while President Obama has searched for ways to step up the war against the terrorist group, which has expanded its operations beyond its territory in Iraq and Syria, senior White House officials on Sunday again ruled out the introduction of substantial numbers of American ground troops. And this, Mike, was sort of the big bone of contention on the Sunday news shows with Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz leading the charge of actually putting out numbers and saying this is how many people we need to put on the ground.
Yeah, it does. It's reminiscent of the time after 9/11 when people were using the emotion to really rally people to go to war, and it does feel like that again. It seems like the calls are coming. President Obama has been criticized because just last week he tried to downplay the influence of ISIS and suggest that it had been contained, and they're throwing that back at him now. They're saying this is an attack on humanity and the civilized world, and we have to respond. It's rhetoric we've heard before. It's hard to resist. One of the elements of this will be because France has declared war on ISIS, whether that invokes an obligation by the U.S. under NATO's treaty, and whether we need to go in there and other countries need to go in there to support France.
So it's Article 5, I think?
Article 5,
and
that's
so
right.
And so that was what they invoked after 9/11, the only time it's been used, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And
so far they've not done that.
They have not. And whether this meets that test or meets that standard, I guess, is being debated. I don't know who it is that decides that, actually, except the NATO countries together would have to do it. But it feels like there's a groundswell now. It feels like America's I don't know about Americans, but it feels like the politicians, especially the Republican politicians who are running for president, are getting onto the bandwagon that we need to be able to commit our troops. And that is a serious move on the part of the U.S. It will be hard for the president to resist it and his predecessor, or his successor, I mean, to resist it. Yeah.
There are so many points that we can cover this morning, and I'm hoping we get to many of them. But there's just so many different things that we can focus on, and this may not be the most important one. But I'm curious, as it seems that the kerfuffle when it comes to the presidential candidates is over the use of the word radical Islamism. A word that during the Sunday or Saturday,
not just the
debate,
Republicans, the Democrats too.
Right. The Saturday debate.
Right.
Between the Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton and the other candidates refused to call it that. And I guess I'm just curious as to how important that is of what we call it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think everybody's furious. And, you know, it may be important in that it could create a distinction between those Muslims who are not affiliated with this. And if you say radical, then you basically are saying to the Muslims who are good people, you know, we're not including you in our hatred. So there's that possibility. Let me say, Joe, we're getting a lot of letters. And let me just tell you some of the themes, if I may. Theme number one is let somebody else do the fighting. And that's not us. That's the Arab countries who have the most to lose. In the region. So we're getting several letters on that. Then we are also being told, go get them. Just go get them. So that's a tough one. That's the kind of thing that starts every war with the bands and the marching bands and the John Philip Sousa marches. People have kids. And people don't want to see those kids with their boots on the ground, in a foreign country.
What if the fight is brought here?
Well, the fight is going to be brought here, Ray. There's no two ways about it, right? We know that if they'll do it in France, we saw the guy trying to do it in Times Square a couple of years ago. Remember that? And light up the bomb. We just got lucky because a cop saw it and put a stop to it. But I think for us to believe that they're not going to find like-minded people who will do this in this country is just naive. It's going to happen here.
I just want to, before we leave this idea of radical Islam, Rick Santorum tweeted, "Yes, Hillary Clinton, we are at war with radical Islam. You are not qualified to serve if you cannot even define our enemy." Jeb Bush posted during the debate, "Yes, we are at war with radical Islamic terrorism. Hashtag Dem Debate." Governor Mike Huckabee, "You're all grown up now. You can do it. 3 words, 10 syllables. Say it with me. Radical Islamic terrorism."
Well, you know, Hillary Clinton just came from being Secretary of State and part of the Obama administration. They have clearly decided that the term radical Islam does not distinguish between most Islamic people and the very small percentage that are militants, jihadists, etc. And they would rather use the word jihadists. And language does matter. It does push buttons with people. And perhaps it's moot now, as you say, Alan. I don't know what difference it makes now.
Well, we all know who the enemy is. That's the point.
Yeah.
We know who the enemy is. To try to make this a definitional one, I think, begs the question of what we're going to do about it.
Well, yes. And that is the next point. What do we do about it? And what is the long term, as I mentioned before? Short term, we're working with the French and their retaliation. Long term, what do we do? And especially when we are so unsure of exactly what is going on, that these so-called soft targets, they didn't attack the Eiffel Tower. They didn't attack the Louvre. They attacked a nightclub. They attacked a stadium. They attacked
where the president was, by the way.
Yes.
Where a security guard who was Muslim prevented the guy from coming in with his belt, suicide belt. So interesting.
Well, and also, I mean, to me, the big takeaway is that you can have that kind of coordinated attack, and we saw 129 people die, which is a really small number considering what it could have been.
Well, the whole idea is to frighten. The whole idea is to upset people and to get them. So it didn't really matter if it was the Eiffel Tower or if it was 129 people. It was infuriating. It was terrible. And they had their way. They got their worldwide headlines. They got their incredible pushback. And that's what they wanted.
With all due respect,
to
everyone who says the intent is to frighten, the intent is to kill us and kill us all.
I don't necessarily, they're not rational people, perhaps, and maybe they believe they can kill the West.
but if you walk into a building with a bomb or a gun, you're looking to kill people.
I don't mean to put it in these terms or make it sound this way, but killing 129 people and seriously injuring another 300-something is a horrible, horrible thing, and but it achieves two things. It inflicts enormous pain on lots of families
sure.
and an entire community, but it also frightens the world.
Yes.
And, you know, you combine that with whether or not the Russian plane that went down was an ISIS bomb. Perhaps it was. A lot of people in the West are saying that.
Well, they did take credit for it, I believe.
Right. They did take credit for it. And whether it turns out that was the case, we'll know, perhaps. But and other terrorist attacks across the Mideast in the last week, you know, they're trying to do exactly what the definition of terrorism is, and it's effective. It's scaring people, and it has people like politicians like George Bush saying this is an attack on the entire world when they haven't the resources to attack the entire world.
Well, that's an interesting question. So to bring clarity, even
yes.
more clarity than mm-hmm. because he's always clear, to Ray's position, the question is, if they got their hands on an H-bomb
right.
and could put it into the United States, would they?
Yes.
I don't think they would hesitate. I agree.
Yeah. They would.
The intent is to kill all those who are non-believers. My question is, if they killed all those who were non-believers, would they then continue to kill each other? I think they perhaps like killing.
This gets to be absurd, but the idea of killing all the non-believers would be billions and billions.
Isn't that the goal, though?
Well, I mean, that would take the whole world. They could end the world, I guess, and if you want to play doomsday.
Well, if you were an apocalyptic
They're not trying to make a caliphate in Western Europe or the United States. They're trying to make it in the Mideast, and they're trying to get Western Europe and the United States to stay the heck out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Bob wants us to know it was a street vendor who told the cop, and he says, get your facts straight. Okay.
Well, that was admirable of that person to report that to the police. Yeah.
No, Mike said it was admirable for the person to take a cheap shot.
And no, it was admirable of the officer. To tell the.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a break. We'll be back, and we'll continue our conversation. We'll get your letters as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 16th of November. The panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We have several letters. We'll get to those, and then we'll move on and talk about other aspects of this very large and important story.
Our friend Julia says, what's different about the Paris attack is that the attackers are, quote, professional battle-hardened Daesh fighters, not amateur recruits that al-Qaeda has tried to use here since 9/11. If we do take Syrian refugees, they need to be vetted first in an Ellis Island-style holding facility. You know, that's interesting because one of the reports this morning said that the guy that they're looking for, you know, over all of these countries, walked right through and was admitted from one over the
Belgian border.
Belgian border, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But apparently not enough. And Kevin says, the horrific terrorist attacks in Paris has changed the focus of the presidential race. Terrorism and foreign policy is becoming the major issue for voters. Normally, voters would turn to candidates with experience, but the 2016 presidential race has been anything but normal. What impact will a terrorist attack in Paris have on the 2016 presidential race?
Okay. Do you remember the presidential race where bin Laden, very late in the game, said, don't vote for Bush? Do you remember that?
Is that 2004?
I don't.
No, yeah. I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it was the re-election.
2004.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And it changed the whole thing, I think.
Okay. And then Man of Peace says, good morning. Republicans should remember that radical terrorists are not necessarily people coming over the border. Some terrorists are homegrown converts. They have blonde hair and blue eyes and therefore defy stereotypes. Timothy McVeigh committed a horrible act of terrorism, and no, capital N, act of immigration reform would have stopped him. All right. All right. And then Michael said, words do matter. Jihadist is an Arabic word. I think it means something like glorious war.
I was just looking that up, and I couldn't find that particular definition, but it doesn't mean it's not true. I just couldn't find it.
We shouldn't use it to refer to terrorists. I don't mind using it, by the way, but that's his position. And Daniel, no, I don't hate Muslims. Yes, I have eaten at the table of Muslims, Pakistani. Yes, I was heavily involved in youth ministry and at the and a, at and and a, extremely diverse church in the inner city of Albany, picking up people in Arbor Hill and elsewhere. It is many people's opinions that it is not as tiny as we are led to believe, certainly not a majority, but there are quite a few sympathetic to this evil cause, and it goes on. But as you know, we tried to limit these messages. And from Joel, for the bottom line on ISIS, please read what ISIS really wants in the Atlantic Monthly.
Ah,
yeah,
okay. Atlantic Monthly.
Okay, yep.
Is there a link?
No links, Cody says. The hacking group Anonymous has officially declared war on ISIS, saying, "War is declared. Get prepared." This is rather a surreal development, something I would expect from a James Bond movie. Two notorious international groups battling each other. Does the panel think this is a positive or negative development? Okay. And Ildo from Amherst. We love Amherst. Hello, Roundtable. I pray for our world. Can you comment about how some people are complaining? How come the media coverage only about Paris but not what happened in Nigeria or Kenya, where as more and more people died? Doesn't that empower ISIS?
Lucy, I think there's more media assets in Paris, to be honest with you.
Well, it could be, but it's also, this is a terrible thing. And, you know, I don't react well to when somebody says, the point is well taken.
Yeah.
That there are that there are some terrible things that go on, and we pay more attention to those more
closer.
Like us than those who are less like us. On the other hand, I don't think it excuses anything.
No, you're right. But every major network has an infrastructure already in Paris. It's much easier to cover such things.
A question from Luca. How does anyone defeat an ideology with guns? Has that ever been done? Well, I'm kind of thinking about the Nazis.
Yeah. I mean, they're still Nazis, but they're greatly diminished.
Yeah, there's still some Nazis, but and the ideology may still be there for anybody who walks around Germany, you know, and sees some of the manifestations of that. But
Nazi Germany was defeated.
Yes, was defeated, and the ideology was defeated. And from Michael, I am a gun owner. I am not an NRA member. The NRA is an enemy of the people and concerned not with gun safety, but only business for its cronies. But I can't resist thinking that those kids in the theater would have at least had a chance if they were armed. All right. World Jewish Congress. Oh, no, that's not for us. Okay. I like this one from Tom, so I'm going to read it. I hope everyone who wants to go to war sends their kids also into the fray first. It's always germane, that point. Okay, so then Tom, Dan, and James says, time to force our supposed Arab and Turkish allies in the Middle East to put many of their almost 2 million U.S. armed and trained military on the ground against the approximately 40,000 ISIS. To date, they have been using their forces for an occasional airstrike, but mostly suppressing their own people. Okay, and Gary says, we all agree that the recent terrorist activities in Paris and Beirut and downing the Russian airplane were horrendous and place a black mark on humanity. As for what to do, the answer may lie in doing less, not more. We are fighting an ideology, not a sovereign nation. Well, now, I find that sovereign nation thing to be very interesting, because when France declared war, remember that the other day the president announced it was an act of war, they hold territory. And if you are a country...
You mean ISIS holds territory.
ISIS holds territory. And so, therefore, they're now a country, as opposed to an al-Qaeda sort of, you know, amoeba. So if you hold territory, you're a country as far as I can see. No? Yes? Okay.
Need an international lawyer here to weigh in. What does constitute a sovereign nation?
Right.
Jack says, France must be careful not to make America's mistakes, fueled by their outrage that could find themselves in their own drawn-out Afghanistan conflict or take away liberties of their citizens with a version of the Patriotic Act or the Patriot Act.
Well, to be fair, I think France has been involved in bombing ISIS positions since 2014. It's only in the last few, I don't know, 6 weeks or a couple of months that they're actually going across Syrian
into
lines.
Into Syria,
right,
yeah.
Right. Beyond Iraq, yes.
As in World War II, when the world came together to defeat the Nazis and Japanese militarists, the world should have come together to defeat ISIS, should come together to defeat ISIS, and then have a Marshall Plan for the Mideast, just as we did for the defeated countries in World War II, so that this doesn't happen again. And that's from Rick. And Daniel says, okay, no, he says, I apologize for the length. You don't have to apologize. I'm just going to read it.
Okay.
Okay. And Sarah, okay, I think that's probably sort of it. Okay.
Okay. Let us go back then to the subjects at hand. And, you know, one of the things that I think is important to look at is this is one of the articles that I sent yesterday from the Washington Post. That amongst the mourners at the Paris attack sites were saying we are everything they hate. I know immediately after the attack, Bill Maher, when he got on his show, said the question, he said, you know, why do they hate us? And this is a question that we were playing around with earlier on in the program. But does that – I mean, do we have to look at it that way, or do we have to figure out and accept that and say, okay – they hate us, but this is what we have to do to protect ourselves.
That's a very good question. I mean, to me, it's, you know, no, the answer to them is no, you don't. You can have all the ideology you want. You can think whatever you do, but no, you won't. You do this, we kill you.
Well, the parallel to that, though, we have to build the relationships that are not present obviously in Paris and France between the Muslim community or some of the Muslim community and the rest of France. In the U.S., Muslims have assimilated very well. They're, you know, they fit into our culture. They enrich our culture. And I think in many cases we're a model that has not been emulated everywhere in the West.
Except for the few that might want down the street here who might want to sell a Stinger missile to an undercover agent.
Well, it's that opens a can of worms whether that really happened. But anyway, there is always going to be, you know, radicals that have you know, extreme positions. But by and large, the U.S. has demonstrated that Islam can completely assimilate, and we have it in our society, and we have to make sure that that continues. Also, and I agree, you have to put your foot down and say, if you do this, we have to stop it.
You're done.
Yeah.
And then we got into – there has been great discussion of why these particular sites. And the question as to is it because they have a reputation of diversity and tolerance, and is that why they were targeted? And it seems as many of the French believe that is the case of why they were targeted. But – military experts are looking at it and saying that it was more – the sites were more that of chance and availability.
Absolutely.
Because they were open. They could be targeted by fast-moving shooters who were in a car.
Because they wanted everybody to know that's what terror is. We could do this to you just as easily as we could arbitrarily to another group of people. That's what this is all about.
It's fear. I mean, it's fear-mongering, and it's successful.
But the sites were still targeted, let's not forget.
Well, you know, we'll find out whether they randomly chose them that night or whether they had targeted them from weeks ahead. You know, more will come out about this, but no question they are where the civilians are. They were soft targets, meaning, I think, that there's not automatic security.
Yeah.
You know, people don't expect a restaurant to be shot up or
right.
a nightclub to be shot up as an act of terrorism. You might get somebody who's deranged doing it.
Well, except if you're trying to make a point, Mike.
Otherwise deranged.
If you're trying to make a point that mm-hmm. men and women who dance together is wrong.
So that was a moral judgment.
Yes,
also.
But it may also mm-hmm. have to do with why you choose a nightclub. It also
very Western. I mean, you
right, and right. gets us back to the earlier discussion where I think I didn't say what I should have said, which is yes, it's competing ideologies. Yes, you might have to think about what somebody else has to say, but also there are major differences in our ideologies. We, for example, in this country, have come to a point where we respect gay people and their rights. Other countries do not. And therefore, there's an ideological difference between us, and I'm not willing to sit back and say, yeah, well, we have to respect their ideology, because I don't.
All right. On that note, let's take a break, and you silence the crowd, Alan. Let's take a break. We'll be right back after this moment.
Support comes from Troy Chromatic Concerts, announcing bass baritone Eric Owens, singing selections from Schubert, Ravel, Wagner, Debussy, and more. December 4th at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, troychromaticconcerts.org. Albany Institute of History and Art presenting Masterworks, an exhibition highlighting works from the past 225 years of collecting, including paintings, furniture, silver, sculptures, and more. Opening this Saturday, albanyinstitute.org. Capital Cities Imported Cars, Glenmont, New York, offering new and pre-owned BMWs, serving the WAMC listening area since 1975, capitalcitiesbmw.com. And from Destination Williamstown, a calendar of curated events in the Northern Berkshires, Culture College Cows, destinationwilliamstown.org.
Just so you know, we are waiting for a press conference from the President of the United States. He is in Turkey and is expected to be addressing the media and having a full press conference this morning from Turkey. We are being told we're being told that it could be at 10:25, 10:36, or in 5 minutes.
Well, yeah,
so we are so if we bail on you quickly, you'll know why.
But if we get some smoke signals from the control room. There were a lot of hand gestures going on just now.
Well, there's a lot of internet chatter, let's say,
yeah.
From the network as to the time. So, NPR,
I'm sure they'll let us know 30 seconds before it starts.
NPR put out a very definitive statement that they changed their mind on about 2 minutes later. So we'll see what. Okay, so 9:51:30 is what I have, right? Okay, so we will hit it at 9:51:30. So that gives us 2 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, to wrap up our program this morning. So
with a warning to everybody that I'm not reading any letters that don't have names at the end of them.
Okay, man.
Period. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's one of the minutes.
All right.
Well,
Mike, any closing words before we listen to the president?
Well, I think that it is now a big part, as we've said, of the current presidential race, and we're going to hear a lot more about this from all the candidates, and it's going to be exploited, and it's going to be important to try to stay above the blather and keep an open mind.
Yes.
Alan, anything in the minute that we have left?
No, I think the world feels terrible about this. And our hearts go out to the people in France as their hearts went out to us at various times in our history when they basically saved our hash. We wouldn't be here without them. So, it's a terrible feeling.
I do want to mention just what we're going to be waiting for that will be coming over in about a minute from NPR. The president is expected to speak at the G20 summit. I believe we are going to hear that, and then we will hear the press conference following that. As far as all of the stuff that I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we will be doing, well, that will be rescheduled, and we'll hear that at another time. But I do want to remind you that we'll be obviously covering the story throughout the day. We'll have more on Midday Magazine coming up at noon, as well as on Northeast Report, Northeast Report Late Edition, and All Things Considered Tonight. So keep that in mind. We will be back after
really?
This break. Well, we're going to take a break and get underwriting.